at Cairo Nights. Man, you got good taste.
I know. It's like that scene in High Fidelity, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like, I will now sell 5 EPs by the Beta Band. That's exactly what it is.
I love that. I love that. And you remember the girl? Is this the Beta Band? The one who was the writer in the show, right?
Yeah.
She was she worked for the local...
Chicago Reader.
Yes, yes,
she was,
yes.
The columnist. I'm forgetting her name.
I can see her face because she's
Carolyn. Carolyn,
right? You know whose daughter that was?
Who?
That was Natalie Wood's daughter.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Did not know that.
Yeah, I can't remember her name now at the moment, but I was watching a show about, I think it was a Netflix special about the death of Natalie Wood and the controversy surrounding that, and she, the actress from that scene, was the narrating and hosting this Netflix program about Natalie Wood, and it was Natalie Wood's daughter, Natalie Wood and Robert Wagner's daughter. Carolyn Fortis was the name of the character she played in the writing the story about Rob, and it was an integral part of the movie because that was him realizing that he's got a pattern. I'm going to make her a mixtape. Yeah, yeah, it is. And his girlfriend slash fiance Rob, of course, John Cusack's character, busted immediately his pattern. Who are you making a tape for, you know, because that's what he did.
Oh, I remember that, though. Only for me, it was only a couple of tapes, and then I got a CD burner. Mm. And that was always the thing in a relationship or when you had a pen pal or something you were really into and you wanted
absolutely to
bond with them.
Yep.
Making them a mixtape or a CD. That was fun.
I remember when my youngest was falling for, you know, their first, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. I'm trying to be respectful. Their first love interest. There you go. Come on, Spike. You can do this. And a mixtape, a playlist, was so important. And that hasn't changed over time. It's still so important.
I remember on the tape that I made for my very first girlfriend, The Smiths and Squeeze. That relationship did not last.
No kidding. Yeah, that's kind of...
We discovered an immense musical incompatibility that was a bad sign.
Well, there's your sign.
It spelled doom. That actually would have been more in her genre.
There you go. Oh, yeah. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. And that smart guy in the other room is Matt Butler. Let's see. What have we done that we need to do again? I want to make sure. A lot of stuff. It's business time here at Cairo.
Also a great song by Flight of the Conchords.
It's business time.
Yeah.
I love Flight of the Conchords, man. Oh, that's great. Oh, let's see. What have I not gotten to here tonight? The 67-pound goldfish. That's a hilarious freaking story.
Ugh. Most goldfish don't seem to live that long in captivity, but that one, boy, he had a extensive, yes, I could talk, I get paid to do so, extensive career in fishdom.
Yes, here. Most of the times you hear about the alligator released into the sewer system because the family couldn't keep it, and it ends up, you know, growing to be 12 foot long, living in the sewers of New York or somewhere.
Which reminds me, I want an update on that Linwood alligator.
I want to know how he's doing. For those of you who might remember the story, if I can remember correctly, it was Human Services or somebody was checking on a guy and found that he was living in a container on a friend's property. Because times are tough for everybody. You can do what you can. If you've got an empty shipping container on your lot and a friend who needs a place to stay, you let him crash at your container. And was it another pet also that they worried about? Was it like a pig or something and an alligator? And I was living in a container with both an alligator and a pig. I know this sounds like a joke that's with a great punchline coming, but it's not. And the guy was a homeless or, you know, living where he could. And when Human Services came to check on, I think, the well-being of the mule or pig or something, they found a 6-8 foot alligator that they took into, you know, their care for purposes of making sure the animal was treated properly, and they weren't sure what was going to happen to it or how it was going to be cared for and where its eventual place was going to be. Wow, I hadn't thought about that in weeks. Matt Stillingy trying to look up some research on the story. I know I love watching you work. You're a multitasking machine. But let's get back to Christmas. And while Matt researches what happened to our local alligator who's looking for a good home, you know, for your if you get a on your adopt a pet feature this week about look an alligator needs good home, trust it, it's a good alligator. It's a friend. We have
but don't latch on to the fad of adopting alligators just because it's almost Christmas time.
Thinking about that gift for that hard to buy person. Can you imagine taking an alligator as a pet? Oh.
Well, apparently it was rather peaceful. It got along well with the cow.
Was it a cow? It was a cow. Okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Very domesticated. I was impressed.
Yeah. Okay. I remember there was another animal there, and I was surprised that the two were able to cohabitate in a container, a shipping container with a homeless guy, and they couldn't find the homeless guy at the time that the authorities showed up to check to a check on his well-being.
I'm the alligator man. Okay?
That's that different story. Now, was that Cat Williams, the alligator man?
Yeah, it was his show on the, I think the first episode of season two of the show Atlanta. He played a brilliant, one of the older uncles. It was a brilliant episode.
Okay.
It was really good.
That's funny. I didn't realize where that came from. I got to check out Atlanta, by the way. I've had more people since you brought that up. Did a story a while back on Rolling Stone, rated the top 100 TV shows of all time, which is an impossible list to make. It's nothing but subjective, and there are different genres with different restrictions and guidelines, and mash them all together into one list is kind of, you know, okay, good luck with that. It's a pipe dream. But Atlanta came up in the top 10, I think, of that best 100 TV shows of all time, and you had mentioned that you loved it, and I haven't started yet. I haven't found the time to start it yet, but the holidays are coming, and we'll get some time off and time to just sit back and relax. You know, I got to confess that this holiday break, this Thanksgiving 4-day break that I got, Matt worked a lot of time this weekend. And we appreciate that, buddy. I indulged an addiction of my own during the holiday break. I try to watch a little football. You know, I enjoy watching football, except when it's the Seahawks, they drive me nuts. But I found out that West Wing had a marathon going on one of the channels. I think it was HLN. I'm not sure what that one is.
Used to be Headline News.
That's what I thought. But HLN, that was everything but Headline News.
Yeah.
But they had a West Wing marathon. And I was literally up till 3 in the morning, like Friday night and Saturday night, watching the West Wing, you know, shows, trust me, shows I've seen 100 times. But I still love watching them because I'm a libtard, you know, socialist, communist wannabe, you know, that's what I do. But I really hearken back to the writing of which, and it's funny that folks who have a different political leaning or different, you know, a sense of priorities and whatnot that makes us choose political sides, that folks who lean conservative can't appreciate at least the writing of the West Wing. Sure, it's idealistic. Sure, it's a pie in the sky, cotton candy worldview of how a liberal would run the planet or the country at least. But I just loved the morality of those involved and the characters in the show were all there to do the best for the country and do the best job they could for the country. I think I may have told this before, too. We got to interview Bradley Whitford once, one of the driving stars of The West Wing.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, we had him on, and I made the confession that I would watch West Wing in a loop. Literally, I would, you know, I've got the boxed DVD set that comes like in a blue, briefcase type situation.
The deluxe edition.
Yes. Of all the West Wings, all seven seasons of the West Wing. And I confessed to Bradley Whitford that I would, you know, and this was during, I believe, the Obama-Romney campaign for president.
Right.
Which was the second Obama term. It was Obama-McCain in the first term, Obama-Romney in the second term. Obama-Romney-ding-dong. And I confessed to Bradley Whitford that that we had started to become so polarized during that era, you know, as a nation.
Boy, you never could have predicted.
I know, right? What was it about those two candidates?
I mean, wow, I practically have nostalgia for that era simply because the vitriol didn't seem as bad.
No, it's gotten so much worse.
So much worse.
Anyway, I confessed to Bradley Whitford that I would – when the disappointment of political discourse got to be too much for me from the daily news, I would watch West Wing almost as a mental salve to try to write my state of mind about how government should work and should work for people. You know, how we should disagree respectfully and how we should compromise and reach mutually agreed upon statesmanlike agreements to help move the country forward. And that I used the West Wing to kind of remind myself that's what government's supposed to be and was at one time and hopefully could be again. And he's like, oh, you're one of those. I'm like, one of what? He's like, you're a, what we call a wing nut. And I took it as such a badge of honor to be called a wing nut by Josh Lyman or Bradley Whitford, excuse me. It was a real moment for me, by the way. But anyway, this last break I took a few hours to veg out in front of the TV and watch West Wing. And it was funny, at one point my wife came up, she was downstairs in her family room watching Ways to Kill Your Husband and Get Away with It shows, because I know that's really part of her overall plan. But she came up and I'm sitting on the big couch in my living room watching our big screen TV over the fireplace because, you know, white privilege and all. And I got the puppies in my lap, you know, resting, got her head in my lap. She's kind of snoring, got a cup of coffee in my hand. I'm watching West Wing. My wife comes up and goes, oh, look at you. You're just, she's right. I was right in my happy spot. It was fantastic.
Do you believe, though, that thinking back to those times, and I'm not saying that you have to agree with every policy of Barack Obama, but didn't it seem like at a certain point in history, in relatively recent history, we had really turned a corner in terms of how we viewed the presidency? We had turned a corner. We had said, all right, we have our first African-American president. Even people who disagreed said this was a historic moment. It felt like there had been some healing of racial divides.
Oh, I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
And then along comes, I'm not going to name names, but it seems like we turned back to a very divisive, almost fearful of other people sort of time in our culture. Well, and I thought we'd really turned the corner on that.
He who shall not be named. Baltimore, can we call him?
Yes. I want to say his name thrice lest he be summoned.
I have to give Colbert credit for that one. Baltimore. I'm like, that is freaking funny. Anyway, that was not by accident. That was on purpose. That was capitalizing on a national state. And not to get too political down the alley on you guys, but when we had our first African-American president, it was unnerving to a larger than we ever thought segment of this country. And that segment was played to with talk of how the country you love is being taken from you and others are the problem and yada, 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 and so on and so forth. And that's kind of how we got to where we are today. So, yes, I do hearken back for a time when the biggest complaint you had about a president was the color of the suit he wore.
And you know what you never see, Spike? You never see people who made the apocalyptic predictions about, say, Barack Obama's presidency. Mm-hmm. You never see him come back and say, hey, he didn't actually take your guns. He didn't do these things right. That we were afraid he would do. They just move on with the next fearful thing. So the fact that people don't do some reverse fact checking and have it sober them a bit and go, you know, even if I didn't agree with him, even if I didn't vote for him, he didn't do all of those fear mongering things that I was made to shake in my boots over. It would be a good lesson and for both parties, too.
Oh, no, agreed.
George W. Bush did not do everything that some on the left thought he would do.
Right. Agreed.
I'll even say he who not, shall not be named.
Right.
He did not do everything that people on the left feared he would do. That doesn't mean you agree with his policies, but it also means that our institutions have held strong so far.
Oh, no thanks to him, but you're right. Yeah. Not for lack of trying, but yeah, I get what you're saying. And, you know, we will never – I wish we could get to a point where we can disagree respectfully and admit when we're wrong, admit that, you know, okay, it didn't get as bad as we all feared it was going to get, and he actually did some things that were good for the country, yada, yada, yada. And I'm just as guilty as anybody else. Oh, who's pulling Biden's strings? Come on, guys. Come on. We're not going to do that. No, we've had such a great time tonight.
We're talking conceptually about having a positive view of America's institutions and their resilience.
Exactly.
And it's interesting to me how people don't look back into history and go, you know, maybe I feared this thing about this person, but it didn't happen, and I'm grateful. And have them take maybe a more critical look at the hyperbolic things you hear in campaign ads and on cable news.
I agree. And a texter points out the TV show House of Cards. You remember that one? With Kevin Spacey?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. President Frank Underwood? That was and by the way, Kevin Spacey's coming back. He won a civil suit against him, brought about by an actor, and I'm not sure what I can see his face, but can't remember his name. That had accused Kevin Spacey of misconduct on a set of a show they were working on together, and it went to trial, and Spacey was acquitted. And Spacey is now, I think, signed the first. I just read he signed a deal to do his first bit of work again since his cancellation from public life in his acting career because of his indiscretions and poor judgments and assaults on people. I think it's probably fair to say, you know, throughout the course of his social life, his private life. So, you know, anyway, Kevin Spacey's coming back. And I thought he's a great actor. I've always enjoyed Kevin Spacey's work as an actor, from Usual Suspects to American Beauty to so many other things to House of Cards, President Frank Underwood. I mean, the guy who literally murdered to get to the top. Literally. And, you know, pretty great. Pretty great show. And we talked about this before, too. Can you overlook somebody's moral and social shortcomings and appreciate the work they did as an artist? You know,
I do that every time I look in the mirror, Spike.
Someone says, start by admitting you were wrong about COVID. I was not wrong about COVID in any way, shape, or form, folks. You know? You can talk about all you want about how, unless we'll go down this alley because music's already playing and I got about 30 seconds to just speak my mind on this one. The first variant of COVID was lethal. Over a million Americans died, not just globally, Americans died. And as science often does, you take the information available at the time, make the best assessment you can given the facts, and plan accordingly. And that position changes as more information comes in. That's how science works. Wasn't wrong about COVID in any way, shape, or form. So I won't admit that from the 206, but I appreciate your feedback. Yeah. What a fun time we're having.
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart. It's Cairo Nights, and I'm not always right. Neither are you.
Hey, now.
But I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about the textures. And Matt, though, is always right. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cairo Nights.
I think the text line warned you about asking that question.
Ain't this the greatest, Aretha? Oh.
Sometimes the music says it best.
Oh, yeah, man. And we almost made it through show without really going too political, you know?
It wasn't too bad.
It wasn't too bad. We should dive
into it. Observation.
If we're in the water, let's just go swimming, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
How about them convicting the insurrectionist guy to the Oath Keeper today? What a story, huh? That's a hard case to make, that you actually put a plan in place to stop government processes and processes, I guess, yeah, government activity processes through violence. You've actually put a plan in place. Insurrection. That is a hard, hard case to prove, and they did it today. They got the leader of the Oath Keepers found guilty today in a court of law. Of the five defendants, I believe two of them were actually found guilty of sedition.
Here for seditious conspiracy. Yes, Florida chapter leader Kelly Meggs was found guilty of that charge. All five defendants were found guilty of obstructing an official proceeding.
Right, which is the peaceful transfer of power, which was the whole genre behind the January 6th attack on our Capitol. And those folks who think it was spontaneous and just a party gone wild, this kind of undercuts that narrative, don't you think?
And to be clear, to be absolutely clear, the Oath Keepers are an extremist group that supports the option of violently overthrowing the U.S. government.
Right.
They are a homegrown terrorist organization, period. And they're not conservatives. They're not Republicans.
Nope.
They are far-right anarchists.
Yep. Who are happily courted by some elements of the Republican Party. Happily courted. Speaking of which, how was your Thanksgiving dinner? Because Donald Trump had a really crappy Thanksgiving dinner, according to all accounts. He had some interesting guests. We haven't talked about that at all. Briefly.
Guess who's coming to dinner, briefly, the Mar-a-Lago edition.
You know, and we can talk about that briefly, because since we're already in the pool and there's blood in the water, let's swim a little bit. You know, Donald Trump invites Ye down to Mar-a-Lardo, I mispronounced it, for Thanksgiving dinner. And, you know, this is knowing full well of his recent troubles, given his anti-Semitic comments that cost him every one of his sponsorships and about $1.5 billion he lost through these different business arrangements.
He is no longer a billionaire.
Yeah.
Our sympathies go out.
And to quote Dave Chappelle on Saturday Night Live, better put that chain back on. Because millionaires wear chains, but billionaires don't wear chains. Great. Another great piece, by the way. And then former President Trump had the audacity to say, well, I didn't know that white nationalist, white supremacist, fascist Nick Fuentes was coming to dinner.
Along with Mayo Yiannopoulos,
was he also there?
Yeah, Milo was there with...
No!
Yeah, Fuentes.
It's just getting deeper and deeper.
Apparently, Milo is going to be Ye's campaign manager.
Of course he is.
Because, you know, no man... I will be complimentary of Mayo Yiannopoulos only on one score, and that is the man knows a grift.
He knows how to play the game. Oh, yeah.
He keeps playing it.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, and to be fair, when President Trump says, hey, I invited Ye... We had a nice meal. I didn't know he was bringing anybody else. Yeah, right. Like, they don't know who's going to visit a former president. Who's, by the way, still is protected by our tax dollars through Secret Service. Former presidents do get Secret Service protection. You don't get a plus one to visit a former president without them being vetted. Trust me. That doesn't happen. So, isn't it just completely disingenuous for Trump to, like he always does... Oh, I didn't know he was coming. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know anything about him.
Well, the thing is, you can't believe it because Trump tends to have this thing where even the people that he hired to work in the White House, once they scorn him, he does not remember.
Remember him as a part-time guy. I didn't really know.
So either he has the world's worst memory or there's a lot of people he's pretending he forgot.
Well, his former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, you know, after he got into trouble for lying to, you know, federal investigators and sentenced to prison and before he was pardoned, of course, by former President Trump. Oh, he's a part-time guy. I didn't really associate with him much. That was him standing next to you at the convention speech, and that was him standing next to you at the inaugurational. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, that guy you didn't interact with very much. Whatever. You know, so, and then it was Mitch McConnell today, I believe, said, finally came out and disowned spoke out against having the fascists over for dinner, the anti-Semite over for dinner. And, of course, Trump comes out and attacks Mitch McConnell. He's a loser, bad for the Republican Party, yada, yada, yada. You know, it's going to be interesting down the stretch as we go. I say down the stretch.
It's just interesting to me that this sort of stuff used to be a disqualifier. And now in the age of the Internet, what breaks my heart is that you see people, you know, under pseudo anonymity cheering. Like, what's so wrong with supporting Nick Fuentes? Like, that's disturbing.
Really?
Like, the conservatives I grew up with and most of where I like southern Mississippi and Louisiana are not hotbeds of liberalism, in case you've never been there. And so it baffles me because I was raised by hardworking conservative people who wanted, you know, strong families, lower taxes. They were hardworking people. But that sort of thing, that sort of association, that sort of language, the bullying, the Twitter sphere culture of just outright hostility and hatred was not okay with them and was not a feature in their version of the conservatism. So it's really sad to me to see somebody like Fuentes even being given daylight on some conservative circles on the Internet in particular.
And I read a piece by a college professor in anti-whites and white nationalism that when you give these players in that arena, literally a seat at the table, not even metaphorically, literally give them a seat at the table, you embolden that movement. You legitimize that movement. And if the former president is so naive to think that having these folks over to dinner, deny it all you want. You knew they were coming. There's no way you didn't. Secret Service wouldn't let that happen. Letting these folks have a seat at the table emboldens those folks. And that's just horrific judgment. Horrific. Disassociative. Thank you. Gary or Bubba, thank you. I love when the textures help us find our voice. I absolutely appreciate that. Oh. Yeah, and apparently Ye came over to ask Trump to be his running mate because Ye is going to run for president in 2024.
I have to admit, I do rather admire the nerve.
That's my kind of crazy.
That's pretty good.
Seriously.
That's a good troll.
We can all get behind the beauty of that moment. You know, and
well, I mean, you know, with campaign managers and communications professionals like that by his side, Ye is going to be a formidable opponent.
Good stuff, man. You know, I mean, the folks at Saturday Night Live must be going just bananas.
Well, yeah, because, you know, as divisive as these discussions get sometimes, you have to laugh at it that we had the amusement, regardless of your politics, of having a reality TV star feel wronged at a correspondent's dinner, feel taunted, decide to run for president, actually win despite many, many odds to the contrary.
Well,
and then to see Kanye West enter into a presidential race, it's so, I'm not saying it's good, but on some level it is somewhat amusing and I think an inevitable product of the cultish obsession with celebrity that some people have too.
Yeah. We do have an obsession with celebrity, but I want to see them as entertainment, not as leaders, you know?
Right. Like if this were a show, if this were a television show, it would be brilliant. The problem is it's being played out in real life.
And it affects real people. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we can all at least agree on how ridiculous that is, right? Good times. And I'm about to ban my first texter because certain opinions are great and discussions are fine. Civility's wonderful. There are certain words you don't text to a public, to a broadcast radio station.
And it's important, too, I think, regardless of what side you're on. If you can't make your argument in an articulate fashion, then that says something about you that needs work before you start arguing with others over politics.
Amen. When you swear and insult, your ability to have a valid point of view, I think, is diminished. You're undercutting your own pins there, my friend. Anyway, we almost made it, but what a fun night. I've had a ball.
I'm in a good mood.
Great movie. It's the most. We'll come back in just a moment or two, read some of your texts, say goodbye to some of you forever. Oh, good times. Good times. Kyra Knights. On a mixtape you put together?
It would have been.
This is nice.
It's the Replacements.
Oh, my gosh.
Minnesota's greatest band.
You didn't ban this guy, did you? This guy was joking about...
No.
Good.
I did warn him it would be a bannable offense.
Yeah, it's all good, man.
No diss in the Replacements on this show.
Welcome back to Kyra Knights, everybody. It really has been a fun night. You know, even with the heated discussions we have with some of our texters, it's an absolute blast. We really enjoy interacting with you guys. And a lot of times we can just kind of dance around fun topics and social topics and local topics. And sometimes we've got to just take a look at what's going on nationally because it affects every one of us. And we will, from time to time, dive into it. And we'll try to keep it light from time to time. We'll tell stories about our own lives and how they affect us and the things that happen to us. And hopefully it's relevant to you, and we'll share stories about what you've gone through as our audience. And we appreciate your feedback and your input at 888-973-5476. We'll look back and, you know, try to keep a civil tongue and not punch down, as the saying goes, you know, and never resort to profanity or name calling. I hope. I can't promise perfection, just progress.
I save that for after the show when I go home
and start drinking heavily. And as far as texting goes, when I really put my foot in it, feel free, you know, text away. You know, the 253. Spike, did you really just ask who was Christmas in Dallas, right? Is this Run DMC? Says the whitest man in America. Why, yes, it was, Spike.
Oh,
Welcome back from your coma.
I will raise your hip hop cred before this show ends.
I appreciate
it's
you.
It's part of my personal mission.
I appreciate you, man. It's all good. Mary in Bellevue pointed out that some folks have lost power in the city. Lisa confirmed that. About 13,000 Seattleites are without power right now because of the winds. And, of course, winds mean, you know, taking out power lines. Christmas is upon us. The season is here. Some really great recommendations for Christmas music. Six String Santa, we'll get to that this week. I promise the next couple weeks. We got 5 weeks left until you're sick of Christmas music. It's going to be fun. Matt, did you find the song I asked for? Not yet? Okay, it's okay. Why don't you pick one? Pick any of the Twisted Tunes we did, the Christmas-wise. And we'll want to play something for you. Do we have time enough? Yeah, they're short. They were all short songs. We got to work with Richard Simmons once on a song, and it was a real wonderful experience working with him. He was an incredible guy. And we did this song. We couldn't believe he actually would agree to do this with us. And if you haven't found it, no luck. I'm sorry. That's one of the best ones too. We'll do it again.
Find I Am Santa Claus though, which is a Black Sabbath fan, entertains
you
me.
You know what's funny? I'll tell you. Thank you. I appreciate that. We did this song, and we actually had Ozzy. This is how I got to meet Ozzy Osbourne. We asked Ozzy if he would appear in our video for this song, and he did. He agreed to be in our video, and he came to Bob's garage, Bob's home studio, and we brought listeners out to meet Ozzy. And he was an amazing individual. He literally had handlers on both sides of him everywhere he walked. It was incredible dealing with Ozzy, you know, face to face in the same room. I got some pictures I'll show you. He signed some things for some folks. We actually had a listener bring a pocket watch in with the ashes of his cremated son and an engraving tool, like that little, you know, and Ozzy engraved his name on this guy's pocket watch with his son's ashes in it. And to Ozzy, that seemed normal as hell. It was bizarre. But anyway, my sister was out seeing a band in Florida this week. That's kind of a Christmas cover band that do metal versions of Christmas songs. And the guy did this. And when my sister told this guy that her brother wrote it and sang it, and it blew the guy's mind. So if you wouldn't mind, this is a Bob Rivers Twisted Tune.